Translation: Sannyasis who first consider the body is subject to death, when it will be transformed into stool, worms, or ashes, but who again give importance to the body and glorify it as the self are to be considered the greatest rascals. Responsibly, please. Sannyasis who consider that the body... Sorry, got it wrong. Sannyasis who first consider that the body is subject to death, when it will be transformed into stool, worms, or ashes, but who again give importance to the body and glorify it as the self, are to be considered the greatest rascals. Purport. A sannyasi is one who is clearly understood through advancement in knowledge that Brahman, he, the person himself, is the soul, not the body. One who has this understanding may take sannyas, for he is situated in the aham brahmasmi position. Brahmabhuta prasanatma nasochiti nakankshiti. Such a person who no longer laments or hankers to maintain his body, and who can accept all living entities as spirit souls, can then enter the devotional service of the Lord. If one does not enter the devotional service of the Lord, but artificially considers himself Brahman or Narayan, not perfectly understanding that the soul and the body are different, one certainly falls down Pachyantyada. There are many sannyasis in India who stress the importance of the body. Some of them give special importance to the body of the poor man, accepting him as Daridra Narayan, as if Narayan had a material body. Many other sannyasis stress the importance of the social position of the body, as in Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. Such sannyasis are considered the greatest rascals, asatama. They are shameless because they have not yet understood the difference between the body and the soul, and instead have accepted the body of a Brahman to be a Brahman. Brahmanism, Brahmanya, consists of the knowledge of Brahman, but actually the body of a Brahman is not a Brahman. Similarly, the body is neither rich nor poor. If the body of a poor man were Daridra Narayan, this would mean that the body of a rich man, on the contrary, must be Dhani Narayan. Therefore, sannyasis who do not know the meaning of Narayan, those who regard the body as Brahman or as Narayan, are described here as asatama, the most abominable rascals. Following the bodily concept of life, such sannyasis make various programs to serve the body. They conduct farcical missions consisting of so-called religious activities meant to mislead all of human society. These sannyasis have been described herein as apatrapa and asatama, shameless and fallen from spiritual life. Sannyasis who first consider that the body is subject to death, when it will be transformed into stool, worms, or ashes, but who again give importance to the body and glorify it as the self, are to be considered the greatest rascals. Nama om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasadaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamiti Nam Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Teshitarne Vanchikalpa Chupasta Kripa Sindhavivita Patitanam Vimil Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. I was speaking about this the other day to someone. There used to be certain plays on television many years ago by a fellow called Brian Ricks. They were called farces, where people would be running in and out of rooms and all strange, ludicrous things would be happening. Silly things or almost impossible. And they were, I must admit, they were very, very funny, these plays. Really silly. So I kind of looked it up in the dictionary last night, and I looked up the word farce. It's very British. It was a farce. It was ludicrous. Very British. And I came up with words like ludicrous, absurdly futile. You know, absurd means completely silly, stupid, futile, pointless, worthless, silly. Other words, mockery, imitation, pretense. So I thought, it's just about what the material world's about, right? Just about what it's about. Ludicrous, actually the word ludicrous comes from the same word as illusion. Ludo, to play. When we were kids, we used to have a little game called Ludo. And you had to get to the center first and be the winner. Liberation, right? So this whole material world is ludicrous. It's a big game. One of my funniest stories in Krishna book is that guy Pondrika. Right? I mean, some of the demons are pretty sort of cool, you know what I mean? You kind of like them a little bit. Pondrika, he just has two arms stuck on, right? He just sticks two extra arms and says, you know, here I am, I'm Vishnu, right? Really ludicrous, right? You know, he probably went to that shop. There's a shop in Watford where I think the Bhaktivedanta plays to, called Masquerade, right? You can get all these props there, you know, all silly things to wear, right? So you can imagine he probably went there, you know, and glued a couple of extra arms on, right? Completely ludicrous. A masquerade, that's what we're doing in this world. We're masquerading. Masquerading. Or pretending. We put on a mask. Pretending we're God. Of course, when we say that to materialists, they don't really understand when we say everyone's thinking they're God, because they haven't really got a good definition of God. But we have it simply, bhaktaram yoga tapasam, sarva lokam heshuram suridam. We have those three things: to enjoy, to control, and be the friend. We don't really have to sort of get into it too much about enjoying. How many times do they use that word nowadays? It's quite common for people to say, enjoy. When you buy something, they say, enjoy. Right? Of course, we're not against enjoyment, but some types of enjoyment we're against. So there's no really question that we're all thinking we enjoy. When I wake up in the morning, I do not think of anyone else. I think of myself enjoying, I must admit. It's me, 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 me. Being the controller, I was actually interested in the fact they just found the Higgs boson. You know about that? I was a nuclear physicist before when I was about 6 years old. I was sort of interested in nuclear physics. Eventually, I came to the idea that nuclear bombs weren't so cool. But I was interested how they just discovered this new particle. It's called the Higgs boson. And I was listening to, because I listen to Radio 4. Radio 4 is for old people like me. And I was listening to Radio 4, and they said that we've just got evidence for this very tiny part of an atom, which they believe will sort of, you know, kind of solve everything. They've got some kind of view of how the universe works, but you know, they have to admit there's one or two problems, but we're kind of working on it, and this will solve it. And one of the scientists, I think it's a lady, she said, well, we've got some evidence, but we've now found this particle, but we're not quite sure, but I believe we have. I believe? I thought we were talking about science, not religion. Right? I believe. And then, there was someone else on, because there's this guy called Brian Cox, I don't know anyone, he's a sort of kind of cool physicist, right? He thinks he's kind of cool. And I have to admit, having been a scientist, I can say this myself, they're like big boys sometimes, big boys with toys. Right? They get very excited about this stuff. Oh, we discovered this, you know. Calm down, mate. One person on the news, and I watched the news, said, you have to understand, this is not the end. This is not the end. This is just the beginning. So I thought, what the hell have you solved then? I'm looking for an end. You know, can you end all the water, all the floods we had? Can you end children not having fresh drinking water? Can you end some of the suffering in this world? No, it's just the beginning, so we can take a bit more money off you. Right? How long will it go on? How long can a person con someone else? How long does the con go on before we wake up? You see? What rascals. It's not the beginning. It's not the end. It's just the beginning. So we just spent 55 billion euros on this machine. It goes sort of from France into Switzerland, right? It's 27 kilometers lost. And they speed up these particles. They use tons of helium, and they have to freeze it to minus 271 degrees, a bit cold in England even, right? And it's amazing. And I think that they've spent all this money, and just the energy alone is 19 million euros per year. Whoa. Just the electricity. You've got to get these things really cold. You know, you've got to pump energy in like anything. Just to say, I believe. And what good's it going to do? What good's it going to do? You're going to go to Mars or something? They're going to Mars now. You know what you're going to do? Sort of use it as, you know, a landfill. You can bury all your rubbish there or something, right? You can send people, you know, people you don't like there or something. What are you going to do there? Screw it up as well? It's the nature of life, isn't it? When we don't want to solve a problem, we look beyond. We're always looking out there, right? So they're looking out to space, and there's a little bit of a problem on Earth at the moment, right? It's like the other day, I kind of had a bit of an accident in my car, so I cleaned my car, and I was actually thinking, oh, should I get a new car? But then when I cleaned it and looked at it, I thought, it's quite good. It's quite good as it is. You know, so we don't see the potential. And there's so much potential in this Earth. And we're looking to Mars. So, and of course, everyone's saying, I'm the friend. These scientists are our friends. All the people are the Olympics are going to be good for us. It's going to make money. I don't know. I can't kind of get it somehow. Actually, that's betrayal. That's betrayal. When someone says they're our friend and they're not our friend, better you're just my enemy, right? Just come out with it and say you don't like me or something, right? But if you pretend you're my friend, right? Like in the war, they had spies, right? There's this one novelist, I don't know how you pronounce it, is it Le Carre? He writes all these books about spies. Right? John Le Carre, that's right. I was never very good at French. He writes his books. It was a spy that came in from this cold or something, I don't know. But he was educated in the British system, you know, Eton and all that stuff. And it's well known amongst psychologists that these schools make people that are two-faced. Right? And spying's all about betrayal. And don't we feel, aren't the politicians the same? Don't they betray everyone? Actually, we betray ourselves by believing them, right? We believe, you know, we betray ourselves by putting our trust in them. They're very two-faced. Saying they're our friends. Unfortunately, when we want friendship so much, we won't see it, right? When we really want friendship, we'll choose anything, right? When we really want love, we'll choose whatever comes our way. So, Bhoktaram Yaka Tapasam. Srila Prabhupada gives that a nice example of the children like to play on the beach. I like this because I used to play on the beach when I was a kid. I used to make sandcastles. And at the end of the day, the tide comes in and the sandcastles are all gone. So similarly, no matter how great our empires are, when the tide of time comes in, unstoppable. I don't think anyone's ever been to Lindisfarne. On the Northumbrian coast is a holy place called Lindisfarne. I was there about 5 years ago, and we were watching the tide come in. And I must say, it was one of the most mystical experiences I've ever had. It was an amazing experience. From miles and miles and miles, you could see the sea. And then we put some kitchery on, and we got an old camper, and we were saying, well, you know, kitchery takes about 45 minutes to cook. Do you think we can get it? Should we move the van? Or should we just try and stay and hope we beat the tide? And we said, nah, no problem. No problem, you know. The kitchen will be cooked in the time the tide came in. But it wasn't. We were embarrassed. We had to move the van quickly. Otherwise, we'd have been swept away. It came in so fast, and people were just watching it. It was like a mystical experience, that power. Of course, you might say, I'm not very transcendental. I'm seeing Krishna in the material world. But don't we need to see Krishna in this material world? Isn't this where we are? It's around us all the time. Very, very powerful experience. Nothing can stop that tide. And we saw the same thing in Japan. Those nuclear power stations completely finished, right? By the tide, by the tsunami. The height of our technology and power, and nuclear power, and it's finished from a little bit of water. And actually, interesting enough, this particle accelerator they have in Switzerland, it's a big thing, about 27 kilometers round. They spin little particles around and get them going faster and faster and faster, and then bump them into each other to sort of try and prove what happened with the Big Bang, whatever the Big Bang was. And interesting enough, when the moon goes over, the ground goes up by about 25 centimeters when there's a full moon. And they have to adjust to that. In Switzerland, the effect of the moon, you know, we have the tides, but actually the solid ground also moves by 25 centimeters. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. How can we say we're powerful? That moon is, you know, they make this thing, they have to compensate for it, right? For the moon changing it. So it's so powerful. And we're fighting with these powers. It's quite ludicrous. Quite ludicrous. And of course, Srila Prabhupada gives the example that at the end of the day, the father has to say to the children, come on. Come on home. You're playing in the sand. You're making your sand castles. You're making the Shard. Is it the Shard building, that new building they've got in London? These huge big buildings, you know, symbols of our domination. But if the father says, come on home, come on home. So Krishna's saying, Lord Chaitanya's saying, come on, wake up, come on home. All these empires, there was a song when I was a student, they rise and fall in her eyes. It's talking about Mother Durga. They rise and fall in her eyes. Empires rise, empires fall down. And actually, nature can instruct us, because we don't say nature's false. We say it's temporary. But nature's got its rhythms. It's got its lessons. And so as we get older, there's no doubt, we start looking back on our life and we start thinking, well, what a game that was. What a game. The danger is sometimes we reject this material world so much we don't see the lessons. Krishna makes it for a reason. And then there's that. I think it's in Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. Is that the name of the book? Was it the name of that? Brahmananda, was it? That devotee asked Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, at one point he says, no, you cannot fight the material laws. You cannot fight, you know, you cannot just think I'm transcendental and overcome these material laws. And I think that's important, because I think all the time we tend to do that as devotees. We tend to think we're above the material laws. I know sometimes I sort of run my body into the ground preaching, you know, I'm going to get a reaction, right? You can't fight above the material laws. So therefore, life teaches us. And therefore, old age, mentioned here about sannyas, it's natural. We begin to renounce if we take the lessons. If we don't take the lessons, we become ludicrous and foolish. Old men become so foolish in this society, right? I must admit, when I was a teenager, I didn't like old people, right? Because it's so foolish in some ways. If, you know, unless you've got wisdom, then it becomes wonderful. We have no problems. Well, I hope I'm not being foolish. I don't know if I've got a pension. I need to look whether I've got a pension. But I'm always thinking, well, I've got something to do, right? I love telling stories, especially to children. I've got something to do when I'm old. Isn't that what old people do, tell stories? Or do they just sit around boozing and playing dominoes and fishing? Ludicrous. So we have to wake up, we have to prick that bubble. Isn't there a famous poem? Does anyone know that poem, The Lady of Shalott by Tennyson? The Lady of Shalott, she lived by looking in a mirror. She could only see life through a mirror. And she says at one point, I am half sick of shadows. I'm half sick of shadows. And this world is a shadow. Sometimes Prabhupada uses those words, shadow and reflection. He uses them together, right? So this world is a mere shadow. You can't really enjoy. However, it's not so easy. It's a long journey from starting spiritual life all the way up to devotional service. It's a long journey. Manushyanam sahasreshu. Not many people inquire. And of those that do inquire, not many come to devotional service. But it is very simple, actually. And I must admit, I think we need to repeat it over and over again to ourselves and to others. It's quite simple. We're not the body, we're the spirit soul. I think we keep on, I need to hear it again and again. I'm not this body, because I need to have guidance how to overcome understanding that, how to deal with it. But it is the basis. I mean, it's quite clear. Actually, many years ago, I was in about 5 years ago, I was in Oxford, and for Balaram's appearance day, and I don't want to get into it now. We were discussing that thing about Duryodhan. You know how Krishna didn't like Duryodhan, but Balaram liked Duryodhan. How come Krishna's brother likes this demon, and Krishna, got him smashed? And I asked that question, and I remember my brother saying to me, he said, "Well, spiritual life's not all black and white." I said, "It is. It's Krishna and Balaram." It is black and white. It's Krishna. But in one sense, that point is sometimes intelligence means to see the grays on computer. When you're printing, you have black or white, you have grayscale, right? If you see everything in black and white, sometimes that can be really dangerous. We all know how fundamental you can get if you see it in black and white. At the same time, sometimes you have to use black and white, and sometimes you have to be very, very clear. And here Srila Prabhupada is very clear. We must make that distinction between the body and the soul. Similarly, I was also thinking that we need to make that distinction between when we're working with the body and we're working with the soul. As devotees, we have to work with the body. So it's not that we're not in, dealing with material things. But we have to be careful that, in one sense it is spiritual, because we're doing it for Krishna, but we have to be clear what we're working with, right? We have to be clear when we see the equality of the soul in everyone. We have to be clear when we're seeing the differences. Just for material life, we have to be clear. And if we get them mixed up, as here, it gets very messy. Very, very messy. But we need to be clear. Just like the other day, I got a message on my computer, "You've got 36 Trojans, 10 viruses. Please buy this software now." Right? So I must admit, I was kind of thinking, I'm glad I'm on the computer, because other people might just go and buy it, right? Because it was a scam. It was clearly a scam. But you got to be smart, right? Got to be smart. I did fall for it once years ago. Someone phoned me up and asked me for some information over the phone. And I actually gave it before I realized it was a scam. I immediately phoned the bank afterwards. So we need to be very, very sharp, not to accept that which is not genuine. And, the whole world's a scam. We have to be very, very... because they have these Trojans, right? The story of the Trojan horse, how the Greeks pulled the horse in, they thought it was a gift, but within the horse, there were all the enemy soldiers. So this philosophy is like taking in a Trojan horse, right? We can go, "Oh, it's a nice philosophy, it looks good," right? Here's, I don't know what this mission is. Srila Prabhupada doesn't name the mission. They're probably something to do with Rama and Krishna and some kind of mission. But supposedly to do with Rama and Krishna. But, they do nice things like hospitals, blah, 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 blah. But they're posing as that spiritual. Because we have to be careful to understand this fully. But they're posing simply material is spiritual. So we have to be careful. And we have to be careful of that falsity. And Srila Prabhupada says, very, very simple, all this can be overcome, all this gyan, all this spiritual stuff can be overcome just by admitting, "I am the servant of Krishna." And people try and wangle out of it this way and that way. Well, it's not Krishna you have to surrender to, it's the unborn within Krishna. And Prabhupada says, rascals, they don't know there's no difference between the Krishna's inner and Krishna's outer. There's a difference between our inner and our outer. We're all pretending, this is me, and I'm someone else inside, right? Or even on a mental level, we're posing ourselves as someone, but inside we're someone else, right? So we have to be wise. not let this falsity in. It's simple. We're the servant of Krishna. Bahunam Jamanamata. It takes many years to come to that point. And Śrīla Prabhupāda then goes to say, we not only do we just understand I'm the spirit soul, we have to act on it. What's the use of knowledge if you don't act to it? I teach so many children, I say to them frankly, I say, what's the use of going to school and just ticking the boxes? Because that's what education is like nowadays. You say, I've got an exam, and it's no damn use to you. Right? When I was at school, I learned I've told you this before, all the dates of the French Revolution, right? I knew the French Revolution backwards, forwards, all the dates, everything, right? And I think I got top marks, or one in history, right? But did I ever think? So I sometimes tell them, school is not for telling you what to think, it's for teaching you how to think. Maybe we should apply that in devotional service to some extent, right? We need to have faith. If we think, we're going to come to the right conclusion. Right? So I tell them, what's the use of going to school just to tick the boxes? Most teachers agree. Most RE teachers, the race groups, say, what's the use unless it's practical? When I left to go to university, I did not know how to make relationships with people. I did not know how to look after myself. And the result of that can be depression, suicide, drug abuse. But what's the result of not knowing the French Revolution? Huh? What's the result of that? Pointless. Unless you can learn something from it. Maybe you can learn something from it, right? Maybe we can learn something. If it's going to be used in Krishna's service, all right. All right. So Śrīla Prabhupāda says one must understand one is Brahman, one must act on it. And many of us find, how many people study books on something and then don't do it, then go to study another book, right? You see, especially people, if they have some problems, they read some book to try and get some help, and then read another book, but never actually tackle the solution, right? Huh? Book on dieting, right? We just need to take one thing and do it, right? And carry it through. That's all. So actually, it's a balance. It's not an easy path to live in this world. We have to balance being in this world and the fact we're a spirit soul. Śrīla Prabhupāda mentions we've got that conditional nature, who we are in this world. We've got our constitutional position. We are a spirit soul. We're that soul within. And we do things for Krishna. We have to balance those. And he says a devotee is very careful to make sure there's a balance between those. That's what culture is. Culture is just like Christians, or any religion. You go and you have certain functions for the children, like they need to be given a name, so they're christened, right? So you're combining the material necessities with the spiritual, always linking with the spiritual. In that stage, we might fall down. There's always a likelihood we'll fall down. Of course, Śrīla Prabhupāda here is, if we fall down, then it's quite simple. We just get up and carry on. Do you expect a baby? I was actually thinking, Śrīla Prabhupāda gives an example of a baby learning to walk. Let's actually think about it. If a baby's trying to walk and it falls down, are you going to go, you fell down? You fell down, right? What do you expect? And what's it going to do to the child if you shame? Of course, shame is all right if we've done something wrong. Shame means we're healthy. If we do something wrong, we feel shame, we pick ourselves up and get on with it. But if we're completely shamed, and religion does this sometimes, you're fallen, you're completely without me, you can't do anything, right? There's no room to improve. But healthy shame is okay. We find some people who are pious, if they do something wrong, they admit it, they have the self-esteem to admit it, I made a mistake, they apologize properly, they didn't say, I'm sorry, just to look good, they say, I'm sorry, understanding what they've done, and they take responsibility and they move on. It's quite simple, but if we don't do that, it's very serious. If we don't admit we've made a mistake, it's very serious. They say there's no mistake except admitting, not admitting you made one, right? There's no mistake except admitting you didn't make. We're going to make mistakes. The child's going to fall down. Because if we pretend, we say, no, no, no mistake. I didn't make a mistake. It wasn't my fault. I didn't really want to take initiation. Someone pushed me into it. I'm sorry. You made the decision. You made the decision. Someone else might have been. That's a fact. But you took the decision. Now what are you going to do about it? There might be other factors, but those other factors cannot be an excuse. Therefore, there's always that responsibility. We fell from the tool. We're responsible to get back. We're personally responsible to get back. And that means, you know, real honesty. These people, of course, unfortunately here, they've got a built-in excuse. Well, you know, I'm Derrida and Uriah, right? Already fallen. The whole mission's fallen already. I was at a school recently, and also it's a nice one that Prabhupada says here. Actually, I can't miss this one out. Is about the body of a Brahmin is not a Brahmin, right? It's good, isn't it? The body of a Brahmin is not the Brahmin. The Brahmin's the person inside. Come on. And what does a Brahmin mean? He's an evolved soul, right? He's dealt with his problems. He's a, you know, evolved soul. I had a fellow years ago, this is really funny. I was sitting talking to him somewhere here, I think, and he saw I'd got, of course, you know, I don't know whether I should be wearing this, but anyway, I've got my thread on. He said, oh, you've got, what do they call it? Channel, is it? He said, you've got channel. How can you have a channel? I'm Brahman, I'm Mr. Sharma. You can't have one. I said, well, in Bhagavad Gita it says, Chaturvanyam Mayashishtam, Guna Karma Vijaya. I said, it's according to, everyone knows that verse, it's according to, you know, what you are, not what you're born. And so he felt a bit intimidated, so he said, oh, I don't know Gita. So I said, how are you a Brahmin then? How are you a Brahmin? He fell for it, right? Right? So it's very simple, really. We are who we are, right? And if we've got a certain state of mind, it comes out in our actions. We do it. It's not a label. You're not a guru just because you're labeled a guru. You're a guru because you help people and give them Krishna consciousness. It's quite simple. And at the same time, we have to be really honest. Recently, I went to a devotee was late for a preaching program. I went to a school, and no names, of course. And the devotee was very late. And he phoned me up. He said, I'm late. So I said, well... He said it was the traffic. I said, whose responsibility is to find out what the traffic's like? Right? It's not hard nowadays, is it? You just go into Google and everything, you can find out what the traffic's like. So being late, you know, being late, right? You know, being late and having an excuse does not equal being on time. You get what I'm saying? It's a false equation, right? Being late and having an excuse is not being on time. It was late. And he said, well, 3/4 hours was enough. So I looked on Google, about 3 hours, normally. But this was in the morning. How long is it going to take? 4 hours if it's rush hour, right? And so I said, frankly, what's the use of saying, I am a spirit soul, if we're keeping all those spirit souls waiting? If I'm disrespecting you by being late, what's the use of my philosophy? Right? We have to live that philosophy. It has to come out in maybe the simplest, smallest things. It has to come out in values. It has to come out in character. Otherwise, what's the use? And if we make a mistake, we admit it and we move on. Quite simple. But if we don't admit something, it becomes a big thing. It's a big issue. It's not a big issue for a devotee to fall down. It's not a big issue. But if they don't admit it, it becomes a huge issue. It's massive. It's massive. And we'd probably do a big disservice to Srila Prabhupada's movement, but Srila Prabhupada didn't want us to be farcical. Didn't want us to be farcical. Am I saying that we shouldn't open hospitals and things like that? This could bring up a whole new question, but I just want to end with one quote, which it touched me deeply, actually, because our philosophy is, let's make a distinction between the body and the soul. If we look after the soul, the body is automatically looked after. And Prabhupada proves that. He says, if the soul leaves now, everything is gone. The soul leaves you now, or, you know, having your teeth fixed, having your hair dyed, having your, whatever you've had done, your laser treatment on your eyes, whatever you've had done, as soon as the soul leaves, all gone. But if the soul's present, everything's fine. So therefore, if we have devotional service, it's not, and this is a false concept of spiritual life. Spiritual life means it's opposite to material life. We think it means negating. It doesn't. It means if we have spiritual life, materially everything will work out. And when it comes to other people. And I remember in the early days, my brother was telling me in the early days they had a philosophy when they were on Sankirtan, about 1973 or something. They said they were discussing amongst themselves and they were saying, well, actually, it's not really people are suffering. Here we are doing Sankirtan, giving out books, trying to be compassionate. The people aren't suffering, it's just their minds. It's just the mind that suffers, Prabhu. No. And you watch television, it's not real. You're in a mental state. But you suffer, right? You're watching a film and the goodie gets killed. Oh, you feel it. People are actually suffering. Therefore, I like this quote. It should be understood that sages, saintly persons, and devotees are not unconcerned with the people's welfare. Ordinary karmas are busy acquiring money for sense gratification. By the way, Srila Prabhupada uses this word karmas. He's not using it to bolster his own feelings of low self-esteem, right? Even in schools, we ask children not to put other people down to make themselves feel better. So how spiritual is it to do that? To put down the karmas? Does that make us any better? Not at all. Not at all. So when Srila Prabhupada uses it, he uses it, I suggest, with... He's firm, he's clear, but he's not cutting. He's not putting people down. Let's read that again. It should be understood that sages, saintly persons, and devotees are not unconcerned with the people's welfare. Ordinary karmis are busy acquiring money for sense gratification, and ordinary jnanis are socially aloof when they speculate on liberation. See, they're socially aloof. How can you be interested in people? And sometimes we see we're aloof. Should we be aloof? I don't know sometimes how aloof we should be. But actual devotees and saintly persons are always anxious to see how the people can be made happy, both materially and spiritually. But actual devotees and saintly persons are always anxious to see how the people can be made happy, both materially and spiritually. So it's not that we're unconcerned with people's material comforts and their happiness. At the same time, we don't, in the name of spiritual life, in the name, like these sannyasis, rascals, they haven't even realized they're not the body. They think, I'm a sannyasi, I'm so important. We don't fall into that. Very simple, very simple. Thank you very much. Any questions, please?